if your goal is to bring attention to this,
yeah,
and the people who are countering you are accusing you specifically of transphobia, what does that mean and how does that track? What is the salience of this label? How are you or how are you not transphobic, and what does it mean to be transphobic other than it being a smear for your reputation?
Right. So being transphobic means talking about trans issues.
Okay.
That's essentially what it means in practice.
Okay.
To even discuss this with any, to have even the most minor criticism of anything is instant transphobia, which is to be met with violence and screaming and yelling. That's how this gets treated by the, you know, affirmative trans ideology side or whatever you want to call it.
But there's different levels of that, right? Like, there's street tactics to counter you, and then there's journalistic tactics to counter you,
right,
and then there's probably legal and policy tactics.
Right. So, increasingly now, the street tactics to deal with me are just to shout, chant, mob me, surround me, hold up blankets so people can't see my signs. When I went to...
Do your signs, like, have a magical property of, like, warping reality around them? Like, what are on your signs that make them so powerful? Like, this incantation.
Children cannot consent to puberty blockers.
Okay.
And that's my main one, usually on my front. And on my back, it might say gender ideology does not belong in schools.
Okay.
Or sometimes children are never born in the wrong body. I mean, it's just a factual statement. People get particularly triggered by that one sometimes. And one that I wear a lot says the definition of a dad, which is a human male who protects his kids from gender ideology.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's got some spice to it, just
a little
bit.
Spice.
Yeah.
Yeah. People like it. Because we got to get dads going.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, men...
What is that?
...are going to follow men.
Okay.
It's just how it is. When I'm out on the street, my favorite combination, when people come out with me, to stand with me, the best combination is for me to be with a woman. Honestly, it's a pairing of two is probably best for what I do. It's great to have huge numbers out, but what I'm trying to do is have conversations with people. And so if you have a big group, they get intimidated and they don't approach you. But when a woman's with me, honestly, I get less abuse when a woman is with me. I guess it's because a single man standing there evokes, I don't know, stereotypes of, you know, bigotry, or he's just a single white guy standing there. He must hate trans kids or something.
Yeah.
And when a woman stands with me, I guess it produces a softer image or something, you know? And people might be a little more curious. And a lot of women will come up and they might stop. They might start talking immediately to the woman who's with me. Right? It's just natural.
Yeah.
Like yesterday at the University of Washington, I was there with one woman, and then another one came just as a group had come as well to talk to us. So we'd been standing there for quite a while, and a young woman named Athena, who you've probably talked to, she's detransitioned. She came out with her boyfriend, and it was kind of quiet for a while. There were lots of people. There were tons of university students coming and going, but they were just ignoring us, which I thought was interesting because it's a lot nicer than in Vancouver. I'd be getting way more hate in Vancouver than even here in Washington State. But eventually word spread that I was there, and a group came. And so...
Like a little posse?
Yeah, about six people.
Okay.
And then about six more people came, but they refused to talk. And one of them had a trans flag. They don't want to talk about any of the issues.
Okay.
Which is fine. But these other six, five or six, they started talking. And they were a bit hostile at first, which is okay. If they're a little hostile...
What do you mean by that? Like, verbally abusive or... raised voices, violating
assuming space. They're assuming that I'm a bigot. They come into it assuming that, And they come into it wanting to win the conversation instead of just have a conversation. So the normal things that I always hear came up right away. Kids, they think, will kill themselves if you don't let them physically transition, which is not true. Yes, suicidality is higher among children struggling with gender identity issues, and we need to be sensitive to that. But there's no evidence that if you don't let them physically transition, that the actual suicide rates go up. There's just no evidence of that. So I have a bunch of good articles about that on my website, which I referred some to. And increasingly, I tell people to go to statsforgender.org, which is the GenSpec's sister website. And it's amazing. For me, it's the best in the world. It's got everything. All the different subjects are just tagged there, and you can just click on whatever you want to know about, and instantly you have all the scientific facts about it. But when people come at me with a little bit of a hostility or they come with some prejudice, I start off these conversations by just saying something that they will agree with, which is that we should never be putting these children in stereotypical boxes, that there's no right way to be a boy or a girl. If a girl's more masculine, a boy's more feminine, beautiful. Let them present however they want. And I'll just pause. Because that's not what they're supposed to hear from me.
Okay.
Yeah. Right? They're okay. Confused now.
Yeah.
And they'll drop their guard. Because now we have some commonality between us. And they might be open for more of a discussion then. So we talked for probably 45 minutes with this group. And this other woman showed up to support me. And she was talking with this other woman, with these other people. And I was talking to a couple guys. And it was great. And at the end, what had started off with a bit of hostility was this young woman thanking us, like genuinely, politely thanking us for the conversation. And that's just what I do. Mm-hmm. And I've got tactics now because I've had all these conversations. And the same psychology always repeats itself. The same objections always come up. Mm-hmm. So there's ways to handle these different things. But the key is just to be calm and not to have an agenda in any of these conversations. You just have to be focused on what's happening in the moment, mm-hmm. instead of trying to get your information out there, you know? Mm-hmm. Just, if the conversation's 2 minutes, it's 2 minutes. I try not to have an agenda. I just try to use the cliched term, meet people where they are and mm-hmm. get them thinking. I'm not trying to tell people stuff. I'm trying to get them thinking. So I'll ask questions to get them thinking. Like, what is gender identity? What does it mean to be a boy? What does it mean to be a girl? What does it mean to be born in the wrong body? Because they can never tell you.
Can they tell you what a boy is? Without violating their...
No. I mean, no, obviously. We know what a boy is.
Do they revert back to, it's a feeling of identifying as a boy?
What frequently happens is if I say that, or if I ask what does it mean to be born in the wrong body, a lot of them will say, I can't tell you that because I'm not born in the wrong body.
Oh, okay.
I say, okay. All right. So you can't tell me. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. That's fine.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll say, would we ever say that a disabled person is born in the wrong body? Because I find that statement to be offensive. And being offended is a choice, right?
Okay.
It's our choice whether we get offended by something or not. People say millions of offensive things to me, but I don't get offended because that's a personal choice. You decide how you take this information that comes to you. But the expression, to tell children that they're born in the wrong body, you're telling them there's something wrong with them. There's nothing wrong with them. We would never tell a disabled person they're born in the wrong body. We would never tell someone with Down syndrome that they were born in the wrong body. Hmm. That statement means nothing.
If somebody has a broken arm, there's something wrong with you, right?
Sure.
Something wrong with your body.
Right.
But we classify it all like health or non-health or ability versus non-ability or disability? I mean, if you start following that logic of... There's, at some point, we do make a distinction between somebody who's capable and incapable.
Yes, and, well, sure, of course, there's disabilities.
Yeah.
And there are congenital birth defects or whatever.
Yeah.
But if this isn't a religion, if this isn't an idea of a gendered soul,
yeah.
Well, we are our bodies. Absent whatever religious beliefs people have, we are our bodies. We didn't get to some point in human evolution where after 200,000 or 300,000 years of being on this planet, a pharmaceutical company is going to help us be our authentic selves.
Hmm.
That's not how this works.
Wait. But that's what the pharmaceutical companies say. They promise to make me authentic if I...
Oh.
Or I can unlock authenticity through their product. I see that. They advertise to me.
Yeah.
Even on my channel. Probably even this video will have some of that.
And they give out the drugs for free, right?
Well, I mean... I guess Christianity does give out the Eucharist for free, but there's kind of like this tithing thing going on, this kind of goodwill thing. But I don't think that the... You might get your first... shot of tea free, and then...
Right, buy 9 shots, get the 10th free or something.
There was a Valentine's Day sale on mastectomies a couple years ago where you get, like, half off the first breast or something. I'm serious. Well,
then you're committed. You got to do them both.
Yeah. You can't just do half man, half woman.
Yeah, so people just aren't thinking.
Hmm.
Our understanding of this situation is just surface level. For 99% of the population.
Yeah.
And it's not like talking about women's sports, where we've got this swimmer right now at University of Pennsylvania who just won by 40 seconds, literally lapping all these women.
Yeah.
Everyone gets that right away. Clearly wrong. Even women on The View will understand that this is wrong, I think. Maybe they'll pretend not to. But everyone gets right away that's wrong. Men, bigger, stronger, faster, destroying women in women's sports, wrong.
Hmm.
End of conversation. Everyone gets it. This issue is so much more complicated.
Because it's about identity, not about...
It's about identity. It's about a fix for identity struggles. It is about unproven medical treatments where we have been lied to. So there's already been a huge propaganda campaign promoting that these drugs are just a pause button, that they're fully reversible.
Hmm.
We are lied to. Parents are lied to. They are told if they don't allow their children to transition, that the kids will kill themselves. You can have a dead kid or a trans kid. What do you want, mom and dad?
Yeah, better a live girl than a dead boy.
And that's a lie.
Yeah.
We have adopted trans... as an identity instead of it being something that you do. So when I spoke with Aaron Kimberly, who I think you've spoken with as well, trans man in Kelowna, BC, we both agree we should be referring to this, especially in children, as children with gender dysphoria, not trans children. As soon as you tell a kid that they're trans, you've locked in an identity for this kid. They've come out to their whole school as being trans, not as someone who's struggling with gender identity issues. They are now trans. And there is no such thing. This is a self-declared identity, but it's not something in concrete reality. Gender dysphoria is absolutely something that we need to help these kids with. But they are still male or female. Transition is something you do. It's not something you are. All these kids are exploring identities. I'm going to read you an email real quick. This is from a mom in Washington State, actually, who couldn't find counseling for her kid because there's a conversion therapy bill in Washington State that considers it conversion therapy to help a girl to feel comfortable as a girl when the girl has previously declared a trans identity, right? So this says, "Hi Chris, I'm a parent of an ROGD daughter, so rapid onset gender dysphoria. Not traditional gender dysphoria that starts young with 3 and 4 and 5 year olds, but 13, 14, 15 year olds. So she's 17, she told us about 4 years ago that she's trans, so at the age of 13. That was after being demi boy, nano boy, asexual, demi-romantic, and non-binary. At the age of 13, This girl was on her sixth identity already. These identities aren't concrete.
They are in the world of Tumblr.
In the world of Tumblr, sure. But what are these identities based on? In the case of trans identity, it's just based on liking certain stereotypes that we traditionally associate and are associated with the other sex. And sure, men are going to have certain tendencies that are different than women. But with all men and all women, of course, you get huge deviation from that. Doesn't mean you're not a man or a woman. There's no right way to be a man or a woman, boy or girl. But we have identity politics that have completely taken over schools, high schools especially.
Yeah, in countries.
Yeah.
So back in the 90s,
yeah,
what were your identities?
I didn't have one.
You didn't have one?
Nothing
like goth, sports, biking?
I mean, I didn't consider it an identity, but I was a sporty guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't have, I'm Christian, I'm an atheist, like any sort of ideological?
I didn't go to church.
Yeah.
Today, that's a long conversation. I have had some things in the interim, but I would consider myself agnostic, meaning it's really impossible to know
till you're told
where this all came from.
Yeah.
I mean, scientifically speaking, the fact that we are here right now, the fact that I'm sitting on this chair made of matter is scientifically impossible, because matter, energy, can neither be created or destroyed.
Hmm.
Every atom that is on this planet has been here since this planet was first formed. No new atoms have been added to it.
Well, meteors, but...
Meteors, yeah, I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
But you can't destroy them, you can't make them.
Yeah.
Yet here they all are.
Yeah.
And even if you believe in God, well, there's still the ultimate question of, well, where did God come from? And so the Christian answer to that is, he was always here. He'll always be here. But that doesn't satisfy my brain.
Yeah. But if there is some crossover in the just religious framework, the religious frame of mind within transgender ideology as it is expressed at various levels, from the academy to the streets to the policy, which probably isn't thought through as well as we would hope, but is it necessary to have a counter theology, or is it enough to ask questions?
Is it necessary to have a counter theology to what?
To, like, that girl, that 13-year-old girl going demi-boy, demi-god, whatever, you know?
Yeah.
If she had another kind of framework to work out her, another sandbox to work out her identity, say, derived from a spiritual tradition or derived... Yeah. I don't know where else you would get something like that, but people will play with their identities. The one thing about the trans identity with children is that it is inevitable, or there is a very big elephant called the medical industry in the room that's ready to alter their bodies in ways that are unprecedented.
Right. When I went to high school, so this was in... I was born in 75, so I graduated in 93.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible fashion, by the way.
Well, we'd have to go back and look at Ethan Hawke and Winona Ryder and
yeah, baggy acid wash jeans, rolled up and then
opaque,
tightened. Yeah, yeah, whatever you call that at the bottom. Baggy sweaters.
Yeah.
Anyway, people weren't exploring identities. They weren't. The kids were just kids. They were playing and learning and going home and doing whatever, but no one had these identities.
Well, I guess with the internet, that whole identity thing, one, you create an avatar, and then you're no longer connected to just the kids that you're hanging around with in your school, so you could possibly find a lot more friends, but you also are working on it, you're working out your identity on a completely different stage. And I don't know if we can adapt, other than unplugging a generation, which I don't think, I think it's too late, but maybe we can, do some sort of driver's license for the internet, where some sort of government program that says you can only use certain internet things until a certain age. Maybe that'll work, but still, they're going to eventually upload their brains into this personality space, and that's where these identity things and these fixtures of identity come from. So,
yes, kids want to find a sense of belonging.
Yeah, and place.
Yes. When I was talking to Athena yesterday, so she's 22. When she was 16, she had a double mastectomy and went on testosterone. She detransitioned 3 years later. But it was two of her best friends who were trans, who, you know, she just kind of got into that world. And like a cult, if you're in an environment where certain beliefs are spouted all the time, it's going to affect you. It's going to affect anyone, no matter how strong you are mentally. And that's what's happening with these kids. So her two best friends were trans. She became trans. And was never challenged on it with doctors. They cut off her breasts.
And now doctors can't challenge.
Right.
Challenge is conversion.
Right.
Skepticism, questioning, talk therapy is all...
Yeah, and the word challenge sounds maybe a little harsh. It doesn't have to be a challenge, but we should be doing mental health assessments, because I kid you not, the last 10 parents in a row I've talked to, all of their kids are on the autism spectrum. I've seen some stats that it's about 40% of these kids are on the autism spectrum. I've seen that from clinics themselves. I want to say it's even higher, just from personal experience, but that's just from thousands of these conversations, but there's always something going on. A girl came up to me in Toronto, she had sleeveless shirt on, and she had about 30 scar marks all up and down her arm. Mm-hmm. She's been cutting. Mental health crises are nothing new for adolescent girls, of course. It's just a hard time. It's especially hard now. The internet. Mm-hmm.
What kind of conversation did you have with that girl then?
Well, she said she's trans. Sure. She actually came over with a friend and asked me what my pronouns were.
Do you have pronouns?
And I said, no, I don't have any pronouns. You can call me whatever you like. And she goes, can we call you she? I said, sure, that's fine. And this was the third day I'd been outside this school in Toronto. And she leaned over to her friend, and she said, you know what, he doesn't seem that bad. Because they'd all been fed this narrative that the bigot from British Columbia, who hates trans people, was coming to torment their community. And we just had a nice conversation. But she was, you know, she's struggling. This girl's struggling. Big time. Who knows what her home life is like. Obviously, she's struggling. Her arm has 30 scar marks on it. But she says she's trans and she wants to get a phalloplasty, she said. But she wants them to take the flesh out of her thigh, not her forearm. And she just said it so flippantly, you know, like it's no big deal. And if she gets the right doctor, if she goes to SickKids, where they just affirm these kids, SickKids Hospital in Toronto.
Is that, it's literally called SickKids?
Yeah, that's the Children's Hospital.
Is that like an acronym or something?
They write it as one word, I don't know. Like, the K is joined from each word.
That's a weird...
S-I-C.
Weird then, branding for a hospital.
Yeah. Okay. But that's the main children's hospital in Toronto, in Ontario, really.
Yeah.
Great hospital, I'm sure. But all these hospitals have this little gender clinic in there, mm-hmm. where they are ignoring even the standards of care that the World Professional Association for Transgender Health put down.
Yeah.
They say, and the Dutch protocol, which was the original, you know, mental health protocol for these transgender children. I don't like that term, but they said that these kids shouldn't be starting on cross-sex hormones until they're 16. But all these clinics ignore that. A girl in BC at 13, after she got indoctrinated at school, the first year they started teaching gender identity, she signed a consent form to go on testosterone at 13. Her dad wouldn't sign it. The consent form literally states that we don't know the long-term information associated with these treatments. Hmm. tell me, how can we give informed consent when we don't have the information?
Well, you're informed that we're ignorant, so there's some sort of like lack of information is...
And these are...
At least they're being honest,
these
right?
These are little kids. 13's little.
Yeah.
I don't care how they look. Yeah. You know, especially with girls, they develop earlier. They might look bigger. Mentally, they're 13 or 10. Some of these kids, they're delayed developmentally, a lot of these kids.
Well, taken whatever that means, if you the arc of development is broadened out
due right.
to our excess of material.
Yeah, and a ton of these kids have abuse, sexual abuse. I keep hearing stories. I heard another one yesterday. Mm-hmm. Someone reached out to me. It was a young woman who transitioned, said she was trans, and years later she figured out it was just because of sexual trauma. She'd been abused. And to do proper mental health assessments doesn't take one visit or two visits or three visits. It takes time. People are complicated creatures. And our biology is complicated. We've evolved over hundreds of millions of years, and now we're giving our endocrine system a lobotomy. On a whim. I was talking to Helena the other day. You've talked to Helena.
Yeah.
I'm sure a few times.
Yeah.
So she figured out that Planned Parenthood give out testosterone. The closest Planned Parenthood to her was 5 or 6 hours away. So she made the drive. And the clinician literally told her that because she drove such a long distance, that shows real dedication. So it's a good indicator that she's really trans. So driving long distances equals trans. And she got testosterone in 20 minutes. A big dose of testosterone, too, because she told them that her estrogen levels were high or something. Like, they didn't do any blood work. They did nothing. They just handed out on request. A girl in Sweden, on this documentary that just aired, she suffered spinal fractures from puberty blockers because the bones don't gain any density, and in fact, they lose density. I was talking to a mom in California a month ago. Her daughter was on puberty blockers from the age of 12 to 15. Mom didn't really like it at all, but didn't know what to do. Because these gender clinics scare the parents. But they did bone scans every year, and she lost 11% of her bone density. At a time when your bones should be getting stronger. These kids are getting osteopenia. Early stage osteoporosis. Dr. Marcy Bowers, who's a trans woman and the president-elect for WPATH, has admitted that a lot of these kids, when they grow up, will never be able to have an orgasm. I don't talk about that much because it's kind of an awkward thing to talk about.
Yeah.
But read some of the stories of these detransitioners. They will never be able to have an intimate relationship in their life. And that's probably the way to phrase it better. We're destroying their future chances at intimacy. At holding a relationship. Because they identify as some mystical, magical entity that no one can define.
Is the goal then to get enough people to speak up? Because whether or not you're for or against this, it's absolutely entrenched.
Yeah.
And it's the most, the internet activists will say that they are the most marginalized of all people there.
Right.
The most well-protected, well-funded
right.
Group of people to ever exist, maybe, other yeah. than white men, maybe. I mean, or the landed class, the aristocracy. They're basically the aristocracy of marginalized group. They're yeah. completely entrenched. So I don't know, do you have any sense of like how long or the trajectory of this?
So my goal is literally one conversation at a time. When I have a good conversation with someone, that's a win. And who knows where it goes from there. There will be instances where I had a conversation a year ago and it will bear fruit 5 years from now, 10 years from now, And most of the positive effects from these conversations I'll never know, because it's parents learning what's going on, who then are able to stop this harm from coming to their kids before it ever happens. So it'll just never happen. But I know that this is so wrong. Everyone who truly understands this situation knows it is incredibly wrong that it can't last. Sterilizing children is wrong. I was talking to a crown prosecutor, so like a state prosecutor today, because a guy assaulted me in Ottawa a month and a half ago. Gave me a little punch with my hands behind my back. I didn't respond. I'm used to these things. And he got arrested. But they're not going to go ahead and press charges just because they have a caseload of 5,500 other cases, more serious cases. And I get it.
A lot of punching in Ottawa.
Yes,
it's there is. It's a big brawler town, isn't it?
Well, it's a government town, so you wouldn't think so, but but Canadian government is completely drank the Kool-Aid on this issue. But everyone knows this is so wrong, and I don't know where I was going with that story, I forgot, but other people who have different hats, like lawyers, and therapists, and psychiatrists, and maybe one day even a brave politician, if any of those exist, they'll do their jobs to put an end to some of this. They'll file class action lawsuits, and I believe very quickly one day gender clinics will stop this practice. We've already seen it happening. Sweden stopped it. Finland stopped it. A clinic in Australia stopped it. The High Court ruled children can't give informed consent in December 2020. They lost an appeal, but everything they wrote in their original verdict still stands. The appeal was just about saying that judges shouldn't be deciding on medical treatment for kids because they're not qualified, which is true. The problem is the people deciding on the medical treatment for these kids aren't doing their jobs. They're acting like ideologues. They are accepting a child's self-diagnosis as being trans and going straight away to these medical procedures when we don't know the long-term effects.
When did you... What was the first stirrings of awareness of this issue for you?
Okay. Man... One day, I'm going to tell you a big, long story.
Okay.
A bigger backstory.
Okay.
It's probably more interesting than anything I've ever talked about. But essentially, I started learning about this in 2019. Late in 2019, someone I've known started tweeting all these things, which were transphobic. And I didn't think they were transphobic, but they would be deemed transphobia, right?
Yeah.
Like talking about women's rights being taken away. That was more her line of stuff.
Yeah.
And then a friend of mine who works at the United Nations let me know about Jessica Yaniv.
Okay.
Yeah. Jessica Yaniv is this individual who harassed women to wax his twig and berries, and they don't provide that service. These are all women working out of their home, most of them from India or Southeast Asia. Little kids present. They're estheticians working out of their homes treating women, and they're not going to wax some guy's balls. And he instantly took them to the Human Rights Tribunal. So I started following that. And then I went to a court hearing one day near my house just to check it out. And this guy accused a woman of trying to take his picture in the washroom, which wasn't true. And anyway, he's just a huge bully. And so lives just 20 minutes away from me. That got me reading and more interested in all this stuff. And then I learned what was happening to kids.
And you saw red.
Because I have girls. So, this has all the hallmarks of a cult. Maybe it doesn't have a cult leader. It really does if you go back in time. Some of the people financing it, some of the billionaires financing it, you could maybe call them the cult leaders. But this has all the hallmarks of a cult. And I know that any human being, no matter their upbringing, is susceptible to cults. There's like something in our wiring that when we're immersed in a certain environment, it affects our brains.
Yeah, collective hologram.
Yeah, group agreement and all that sort of stuff. And I learned that this was really affecting girls. And so I wanted to learn all about it, just so I could protect my own kids, because they're really all I care about in this world, and my wife, of course. But I have cult experience going way back into the 90s.
Mm.
So I understand cults. I've done previous work exposing one. And why do people do things, Benjamin? I don't know. It bothered me a lot, obviously. Look at what I'm doing. I've quit my job and everything. I couldn't not do something.
Okay.
I don't want to call it a calling.
Yeah.
But I can't let this go on without doing something. So I'm only qualified to do what I'm doing, which is talk to people. Because I'm nobody. I'm not a doctor. I'm not an academic. I'm nothing. But I can talk to people. And I can take all the abuse. I don't care. And I can stay calm. And I can see this from a bigger picture. I don't take any of this stuff personally when it comes at me. I understand that most of these people are just deceived. And most of these people are good people, probably, but they've been lied to. They bought it. They have no critical thinking skills. Most of these people are really young who are pushing this. It's a lot of young women pushing this. 90% of the abuse I get in Vancouver comes from young women. It's teachers now teaching this. They get victimized in school by learning this ideology, by getting indoctrinated. They get into university. Women's studies classes are now gender studies classes. They're falling for all this stuff, all these lies, all this propaganda. And then they become teachers themselves, and then they start teaching it. So it becomes a cycle. Like all cults, the victims become the perpetrators.
Hmm.
Every cult, the victims become the recruiters. And that's what's happening here. So this is just another in a long line of human weird things going on. Look at humans' history. We burned women at the stake because they were witches. And the rest of the humans around them were afraid of the witches, not the people burning them. Now people are afraid of me, not the people sterilizing children. There's 100 other things like this, 1,000 other things like this.
Has anybody sent you some sort of weird drunk history of men with billboards? It just seems like a Western tradition that probably dates back a while, you know? I remember
I'm not aware of any.
Alright. This curious.
Yeah,
subconscious tradition.
Well, the billboard started because I didn't really have any other option. I put up a big billboard. So Posey Parker started this for me.
Okay. Oh.
Posey Parker put up a sign.
She activated you. She radicalized you. Or put you into motion.
It was something she did that I went, I've had enough. She put up a poster at the Edinburgh train station that said, I love J.K. Rowling. And I was reading Harry Potter all throughout 2020 with my little one. Every night at bedtime, we'd read a chapter or half a chapter. And, you know, even that probably contributed to this a little bit because I became aware of J.K. Rowling speaking out and all that. But she put up this poster, got taken down the next day. Transphobia. It said, I love J.K. Rowling. It had a heart on it. People on Twitter complained. There was no official complaint. They did an FOI request. There wasn't one official complaint, but they took it down.
Hmm.
And honestly, I had enough. And that was in July 2020. And I didn't have the understanding I have now about all these gender issues, not even close. And I'm still learning stuff all the time. But from a freedom of speech position, that didn't sit with me. And it's not just that, it's everything going on. It's college campuses, it's Evergreen. you know, it's a conservative will cause a riot if a conservative comes onto a college campus. Like, why can't we have an exchange of ideas on the one, on college campuses, for example? These are the places on Earth where we're supposed to be able to exchange ideas. Mm-hmm. But society is devolving in many different ways. And so I have two girls. I don't care about my life. I care about their life. And I care about their future, not mine. And so I didn't like that the definition of a woman has been redefined to include anyone who wants to be one. Because I'm raising little girls to be women, and I don't want them dealing with all these issues. But when I started, I still don't even know when I first heard about puberty blockers, but I know that it just went into my brain like, what? We're blocking puberty in kids? And most conversations I have on the street go just like this. People say, what are puberty blockers? I say, just like it sounds, it's a drug we're giving to kids when they say they're the other sex, or they want to switch to the other sex. And it stops their bodies going into puberty. And everyone's jaw just drops. They don't believe it. They don't believe it. But it's what's happening. That's part of the problem with what I do, is people literally don't believe some of this stuff because it is so unbelievable.
It is. It's
and I don't blame things. Them.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I've had some harder times in life, and I thought, well, I even wrote to some people back in July. Like, I thought about this stuff for weeks, and I had different ideas, but I knew I was going to take a big stand from the very beginning. And it's still in its baby steps, what I'm doing. Like, this is, it's not just what I'm doing, it's what everyone's doing. But this is going to keep, I'll keep getting more supporters, and more people are going to keep learning, and other people are going to start stepping up. And I think I've showed that it is possible to protest this safely. Now, not everyone has to do what I do. You don't have to go stand outside of school, where you're going to get things totally blowing up. You can just go to a children's hospital at 10 a.m. in the morning, stand there for an hour, leave. All the haters and the crazies won't have time to mobilize, but in that hour you will have alerted security, you'll have caused a bit of a ruckus inside. People will be asking, what are they doing out there? What are they talking about? The gender clinic inside will know that you're there, and they know that you're just the tip of an iceberg as well. And it gets conversations going. So I've had lots of conversations, maybe 5,000. 20 a day, been out like 250 days, it's probably about right. But I've generated probably a million. It reached a few million people in Ontario in October when I went to the schools, because it got featured on CBC and CTV and in the Ottawa Citizen, and a politician was on the floor of the legislature wanting to change laws so that people can't protest near a school. It was on the radio in Toronto. Like, it reached a ton of people. So most of the conversations that happen aren't of my own doing. It's people having their own. It's people driving by in a car going, what are puberty blockers? You know, I see people will roll down their window and they'll yell, hey, we thought you were nuts, but we just Googled it and we can't believe it. And I'm like, yep. And off they go. The light turns green. But who knows where that leads?
Yeah.
Because little things in life change the course of your life. I'm sure you can think of things, little things that happened, that if you've gone left instead of right, your life would be completely different.
Yeah.
And it's the same for me. It's the same for everyone. So when something is this wrong, when we're harming kids like this, it's simply a matter of time until it ends. I'm just trying to do my part to end it quicker through conversations,
yeah,
information.
And you're developing conversational skills?
Conversational skills?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know how it is. You do all these, you develop skills.
Yeah. Have there been any books that have helped you on that? Like Impossible Conversations or something like that? Have you read about how to communicate at all? Or is it just you're intuitively just kind of testing this thing and that thing, seeing patterns, revising?
Yeah, it's mostly intuitive. I'm a big reader when it comes to current events and news and all that sort of stuff. I read all that stuff. I always have done. most of my adult life was spent in the investment industry, so I had to be aware of everything going on.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge book reader, but I do read some. And back in the day, because I was in sales for a long time, I read books on, you know, sales skills, psychology, conversation stuff. Mm-hmm. You learn some tactics, right? Like, mirroring. If someone's super relaxed and super chill, you don't want to come in with a ton of enthusiasm. They're going to think like you're some alien, you know?
Yeah.
You want to kind of mirror their mood.
Yeah.
And, most of it's just intuitive. But after you'd have 100 of these conversations, you immediately see the same objections every time. There's only 3 or 4 things that people have to say in opposition. And most people just agree. So I'm just trying to get other people having conversations about this, especially people in positions of power, like teachers.
Yeah.
Teachers need to know what's going on. Especially, I ran into one the other day that I hadn't seen in years, and we had a good long talk in a parking lot. And it is very safe to say she will never be teaching this stuff to her kids.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big win, you know? I was talking to a Crown prosecutor today. I talked to him for 5 minutes about this stuff. Because I'd said something like, more than 90% of people agree with my position. Yet, you guys keep allowing people to assault me, and you're not going to press charges on them. You're just setting an example for all the others. You're basically sending a message that they have free rein to come and hit me. Because my position isn't politically popular, yet more than 90% agree. He goes, well, I don't think it's more than 90%. And I immediately went into how kids are getting sterilized. He goes, oh, yeah, I agree. everyone would agree with that. Yes, Mr. Crown Prosecutor, this is what I'm talking about.
Hmm.
It's not about hate, but that's what gets pushed in the media.
Yeah, that's really odd how hate has become such a strong center of value for us. And I understand why, you know, bigotry and of various sorts. And then I guess the closest related to trans issues just in the course of history would be gay rights and the amount of, hate.
Yeah.
And violence,
right.
And then state violence, up to and including sterilization. I don't know how long ago that was, but there was precedent for that happening against homosexuals. It might be the case that, to a certain extent, the trans rights movement came at the proper time to take advantage of people thinking society went too far, and we need to not do that to another group of people. And so it's all green light it's red light against hate, I guess. So if that is planted, the rhetorical trick is all you have to do is claim that something's hate. People are so now sensitized to respond to that, that it shuts down all that thing. And your tactic of having conversations, you can't do that when there's a mob around you.
No, right? They just shout now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is basically what they have. They have silencing you either on the level of media, misrepresentation, or just showing up and causing you not to be able to have conversations. But that doesn't mean that people won't talk about what they're doing, right? So they might, you don't know to what degree a Streisand effect will occur.
Yeah, it's huge.
Yeah.
I get emails and phone calls from people who... I got an email from a student at the school who thought I was this hateful person, and then he went to my Twitter account. Now he fully understands. Honestly, if these mobs would just leave me alone, no one would hardly hear my message. They're doing me a huge favor.
Mm-hmm.
They reached millions of people because of the mob, not because of me.
Mm-hmm.
I would have just been left alone. I would have had 10 or 20, 30 conversations.
Hmm.
But instead, it reached millions of people because of the mob. That's what CBC and all these news networks want to focus on. But to talk about gay rights quickly, they really like to conflate these things. And within the gay and lesbian community, they're pretty split on this.
Hmm.
Because a lot of people see this as an attack on kids that are like them when they were little, because maybe they didn't have the best upbringing, because they didn't fit in. And now without understanding all the actual underlying issues, they just kind of see it as the same thing. But it's totally different. Being gay isn't an identity. It's an attraction. You are attracted to members of the same sex. That's not an identity. That's something you can't control. You're just attracted to them. Now, you can give it an identity if you want, but you don't have to. It's just an attraction. Being
cultures
trans...
Cultures and identities built up around that because of the way that they segregate those people. I mean, that homosexuals will segregate, go and to meet other homosexuals.
Yeah, sure.
In that, there will be a culture that forms, and then an identity or, some sense of belonging.
Yeah, there is that. Yeah, so, you're right.
But not in the sense of what we have now with identity leaping from gay to trans. That's a huge leap.
You can define what being gay means very easily.
Yeah.
It's a man attracted to a man. Mm. You can't define what being trans means unless you say, oh, well, I want to have, let's talk in the case of a girl. Well, she wants to have short hair. She hates having boobs.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to have her period.
Yeah.
And wants to wear pants. And okay. You can not want all those things. You're still a girl. Be as gender nonconforming as you please. Love whoever you please. You're still a girl. Why is it controversial to say a girl is a girl and a boy is a boy?
There's, once you start scratching at the gender question, and there's a gender ideology even within gender critical communities about what a girl and what a boy is, and the social expectations and values of those two groups, I don't think will go away. I think we can loosen them. I think we have loosened them, but I don't think... I'm just trying to answer the question that it is kind of complex, but ultimately the body's the body, and I think one is probably best off respecting the body. And if there's a lot of discomfort, then trying to figure that out.
If there's discomfort, we need to help them.
Yeah.
But we're lying to them. And we know that 80 to 90% of the time, kids with gender dysphoria from a young age, real gender dysphoria, not something that happened because of peer pressure and culture in school, it resolves itself. It goes away. A good scientific article just came out a week ago talking about how during puberty there's restructuring going on in the brain. Bodies are complicated things. You don't just decide to play God with a child's body. So hey, adults can do whatever they want, right? They're adults. Who are we to tell any adult what to do with their body? Now, it would be wise for them to still be cautious and talk to people who have transitioned. It would probably be wise to let your brain keep forming until you're 25 or whatever.
Mm.
But, can't stop adults from doing what they're doing. But a lot of these 18 and 19-year-olds, this is starting with indoctrination when they're little. It started as kids. And when you're heavily indoctrinated into some ideology, it can take years to come out of that. It doesn't happen overnight. The brain has to rewire itself. You're unlearning things and relearning new things. And the mind's a tricky thing, and kids' minds are really malleable. The same children that believed in Santa Claus 2 years ago are going on puberty blockers.
Mm.
Did they really advance that much to be able to make that decision?
Yeah.
But it's adults who are at fault for this. And we just need to keep having conversations. It's the only way to do it.
Has there been a particularly entertaining conversation? Or?
The drag queen librarian was pretty fun.
What was that? What happened there?
I'd been on the street for 15 seconds. I'd just gotten out of my car, turned a corner, walking down the street, and this guy came at me from behind. I hadn't even had time to put my body cam on yet, so I pulled up my phone as soon as he started harassing me. But a gay man came at me from behind, and he was mad.
Hmm.
And so I pulled up my phone and I filmed. and I tweeted it all out. I should probably retweet it again, but this is a man who, growing up, didn't have a good time as a kid because he was different, you know? And so we had this conversation, and within the first minute, I told him what I told you earlier, which is my strategy in a lot of these conversations, which is I'll say, hey, gender nonconformity, beautiful. Let's not put these kids in stereotypical boxes. Be as feminine or masculine as you want. And he goes, well, what about the sign?
What about the what?
What about the sign, he says. He goes, okay, so what about the sign? Because he agreed. I said, well, what does my sign say? He read it. He went, oh, okay. Well, all right. You know, thank you. Like, he agreed, maybe. Or he saw that this wasn't about anti-trans. And this is the case with so many of these conversations. People read my sign, but they don't read it.
Yeah.
They jump to all these other conclusions of what it must mean.
Yeah.
The sign means what it says. Children cannot consent to puberty blockers. I'm talking about puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, all the medical stuff. That's my thing. But they jump to all these conclusions. So we had a 30-minute chat, and he ended up telling me that he was a drag queen and a librarian as well. And so he teaches all this stuff to kids at the library. But it was just a really funny conversation because he was kind of a funny guy too. He was a quirky guy with big mannerisms and kept trying to harass me. But it was fine.
Did things kind of change then, or did you plant some seeds? That was your feeling?
I definitely planted some seeds, yeah. Yeah. People don't know this stuff's going on. How could they know? Media won't report it.
Mm-mm. No, it won't. Well, no.
There's more now.
It's coming along.
It's a lot better than a year ago. Way more people are aware than a year ago.
Mm.
Especially in Vancouver. A lot of these people have seen me 10, 20 times, you know. Downtown. But then as soon as you move 3 blocks in some other direction and go to a new area, you get kind of a new neighborhood. A lot of people don't leave their little areas, right? So it's good to move around, but no, a lot of people know. Tucker Carlson speaks about this. He reaches 4 million people every night. Abigail Schreier's book has gotten into the hands of a lot of people. What you do, lots of people out there doing stuff. Not just talking about the women's rights issues, which are very important to talk about. But that was kind of how this discussion was dominated. And it's expanded beyond that to talking about what's happening to kids. And we need to talk about them both. But it's my theory that the most important thing to talk about and the only way to fix the women's rights issues is to deal with what's going on with the kids. Because if you don't get this ideology out of schools, you are graduating 100,000, 200,000 kids every year, 1 million, who believe in it. And so you'll never fix the women's rights issues if this is in schools. Getting this in schools was the ultimate coup.
Mm-hmm.
It was the ultimate victory for the ideologues. Because now they're indoctrinating millions of kids.
Schools and then the law, too.
Yeah. But it all goes hand in hand. Because the more kids you indoctrinate, they grow up to be university. They get into university, they get out of university, they go work in HR departments.
Mm-hmm.
And they become teachers, they become professors themselves. They go work in government. And the squeaky wheel gets the grease, right? Trans activists are the squeakiest wheel of them all.
They got some pitch to them, I'll tell you that much.
And with, it's the Twitter era. You don't need a ton of people to scare people into obedience. You just need to scream really loudly about how you're being victimized.
Yeah, as long as you, certain identities can't do that.
Certain identities cannot do that. That's right.
No, just have to take it.
That's okay. We don't want to be victims anyway. There's no pride in being a victim.
No, and we're proud folk, us men.
You got it.
Yeah.
You know, celebrating victimhood, not cool.
No.
Ever.
No.
Yeah.
Well, that's, growing up in the 90s, no. That was beaten out of me at an early age.
There you go.
Yeah.
But being a victim now is kind of celebrated and rewarded.
it's hard to disincentivize it. It's really difficult, like with the youth culture. I mean, we're talking about a particular ideology, but it's the whole cultural shift around victimhood and around what people can more or less agree or disagree with what we mean when some of us say the word woke. It's a huge dominant ideology, and your method of confronting this one aspect, I think, is informed by counter-woke methods, which would be discourse, rationality, argument, you know, good, solid, skeptical values, and humanist values that are looking for facts.
In the bigger picture, all the political divisiveness, the creeping in of Marxism into all our institutions and schools, all of this worried me too. Because I'm not a student of this, but I've been an observer of all this pretty closely for a long time. And I've seen a big switch going on over the last few decades, away from classical liberalism and democracy. And it's foolish to think that our society is more advanced and smarter than all these other societies who went down this road and saw their countries crumble. So that's a part of this all as well. But the most insane issue of them all, the most toxic issue, whatever that means, is this trans issue. And the most insane part of that is what's happening to kids. And so, yeah, I guess I just thought I'd take a stand and do something worthwhile with my life, you know?
I guess it's too early to tell, but do you have visions of a book of travels? Have you thought, I mean, you're imminently, what you're doing is imminently, like, filmable and translatable into movies, but there's got to be the groundwork for a memoir.
Yeah.
Even just to get
I'll write
to
a book one day.
Grandchildren or something like that.
Yeah. I'll write one day. I have no plans in the near future. I have other parts I could add to the book that would be equally interesting. But, maybe in 10 years or something. Yeah. I'm not in a hurry. I'm writing the story still.
Yeah. Well, you're living the story.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like living the dream, only more broken.
If there was money in books, maybe I'd write one.
So there's money in billboards? Is that
what
you're
saying? Well, no, there's no money.
Do you have an NFT of your billboard that you...
I cannot get my head around NFTs.
Wait, really? I was going to ask you about that for our investment part of the conversation.
No, I don't understand them.
Okay.
Every time I try to read them, I just... Nope, I don't get it.
Do you understand IRAs?
Investment retirement accounts?
Yeah.
Yes, I used to be licensed in the U.S.
Oh, in the U.S. Okay.
I'm Canadian, but I used to give seminars on board BC ferries. I could book a boardroom on the ferry, and during the sailing, they would make an announcement on the ship that people could come up to the sixth-floor boardroom, and Chris Elson's there giving an investment seminar.
Oh.
So it was like a captive audience, and I'd do four sailings in a day, four seminars.
Really?
And I used to meet a lot of Americans who then wanted to invest some money. So I ended up getting licensed in the U.S., and I was probably licensed in, like, 10 different states. But I got out of that job after getting sued for $1 million. That wasn't fun.
Oh, from the ferry, the barge operator?
No, some clients sued me.
Oh, okay.
People sue.
For billions of dollars. No sweat.
People lie, and people sue.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't want to be in a job anymore where I can work my butt off, and people can just lie and... destroy my life. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Not my idea of fun.
But.
Okay. So.
So you don't have any you're not willing to give advice on IRAs or investment return.
Oh, I mean, we can talk on the side. Sure. I can give you basic advice on how not to lose your money.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I could use that.
The first rule is don't lose it, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, okay, you have it, don't lose it, but you want to grow it. I have to start doing research into that and figure all that stuff out. Are you thinking, you're completely dedicated to this stuff. for the foreseeable future? Is that what you're thinking? And do you have any...
I hope this gets to a point where there's enough support coming in financially that I can become self-sustainable.
How does the support happen? And
well, you gotta, like, the last thing I want to do ever is ask for financial help, but because I'm a proud guy, but I can't afford to do it on my own. I just can't. So if people want me to keep doing it, this is just how the world works, right? And people do want to support me. So I think we're a team. I don't see this as a one-person thing. I never have. I stood out on the street on my own with hardly any support ever coming out on the streets, month after month after month.
Just doing my thing. To your chapstick fund. And
yeah, shivering away, taking a half-hour break to try to warm up and getting back out there. But I've always had a crystal-clear vision from the very outset that if you just keep going outside, this will build. Support will grow, more people will learn, more people will start doing it. I don't want this to be about me. I want other people doing this. I want other people protesting, putting up billboards or whatever. We were talking about the billboard earlier. The only reason I'm wearing this sandwich board is because I put up that big billboard in Vancouver after Posey Parker's, and it got taken down after a day. Vancouver City said it was hate speech.
To love J.K. Rowling.
Yeah, it's got a heart on it.
A big red heart.
Yeah. And so then Twitter was all mad, and I knew that would happen too, so I leveraged that outrage and raised some money and did a bunch of billboards in the States, just trying to get people going. And then all the lies about me started circulating around, and my sport went boom, 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 down to nothing. But I knew if I just went outside and met people, you'd see I'm just a normal guy. I'm not an evil misogynist trying to take over a women's only movement.
Yeah, that's a whole other conversation. That's a whole other conversation. Yeah.
But no, I'm just, you just go outside and you talk to people. And
do you have merch, though?
No.
Okay. Do you have a website where people can, like,
I have a website.
See where you are, and they can see where the money that they would donate goes to, like billboards or travel expenses, stuff like that?
I have a website. It's got a donate button on it. It's got basic information about what I do. I haven't updated it forever, and I need to put so much media and podcasts on there. It's just not my thing, you know? I hate that.
Yeah.
I don't like doing all the administrative stuff.
Yeah.
I'm honestly just the little soldier out on the front lines. Yeah. That's my strength. So if I had more money, I'd definitely hire an assistant to help with, you know, getting bigger podcasts and doing media and stuff. Because I don't ever try to get any media. I just do my thing because my theory is the same theory as Field of Dreams.
I heard that. I was going to say something.
If you build it, they will come.
You had your Costner moment. I saw it when it happened.
What do you mean?
Kevin Costner was the lead actor in Field of Dreams.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just saw you turn into him for a moment because you like had this vision.
If you do the work and you do what everyone else is not willing to do, well, good things happen. When I talked to you the first time back in February, a woman did reach out and wanted to help me with a website because I've mentioned it on my podcast.
Yeah, there we go.
So that's why I have a website, because of you.
Yeah, so now we need someone else to volunteer to post your podcast clips.
Or whatever, yeah. I don't have time and...
Yeah.
I mean, I could do it.
I have bad habit, or I have problems with running my little show. The things that I don't do, that if I did or had somebody do, it would be better for the whole professional aspect of it. But
yeah, but more media will come along eventually. And
yeah.
Hey, I just, every day, I have no plans, pretty much. Yeah. I just try to do something.
So you don't have like a grand master plan for 2022? You're like gonna go
on a 50
state tour? Or
I'm doing one trip a month.
Okay.
If I can afford it.
Okay.
So
and what
I still got to pay off Texas from last month, but I'm going to be in LA at the end of this month, and then I'm going to, the plan is to go to Boston, New York, Philadelphia, and Washington, D.C.
Okay.
I'll fly to Boston, and then I'll have a road trip over like 10 days maybe. Mm-hmm. Those are four big cities, prominent cities. I'll get a billboard up in Times Square and stand in front of it.
Really?
Yeah, I have a way of doing those relatively cheaply.
Whoa, that's a hidden talent.
Yeah.
Times Square billboards. Go to Chris if you need one. Little small little finder's feed.
I did one for $150.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
Like in Times Square?
Yeah. It depends how many times you run it.
Oh, okay.
You pay every time it appears.
Okay.
It's called a blip.
And so you stand there at the right moment?
Well, if you put one up in Times Square, they have cameras that you can go onto a website and there's cameras set up.
Yeah.
Their website's just showing Times Square things. So you wait until it shows your billboard and then you just get a screenshot. And then you can tweet it out on social media.
Oh, okay.
And then that's the real value.
Okay, yeah.
But honestly, what I learned when I did all those billboards in the beginning, it was good and it started a lot of conversations. And that's fine. But they're just billboards. As soon as I had a sign made, because I didn't know what else I could do at the end of September 2020, I thought, well, they can take down my big billboard, but they can't take a sign off my back. Because this isn't hate speech, no matter what they say. So I thought, okay, let's get some signs made. And I went. I actually stood where the big billboard had been in Vancouver as like a protest. You know? You took down my sign, too bad for you. I'll stand here with the same sign. And so I stood there with a sign that said, I love J.K. Rowling, right at the billboard. One guy got arrested for trying to spit on me.
Oh.
He's doing anger management classes right now. But then I started going downtown to where it's busy, just to talk to people. And I learned this is way more inspiring, you know, on social media as well, than putting up billboards, because there's a face behind it. There's a person doing it. So it's not that hard. I mean, at times it's hard, but honestly, it's usually just fine and peaceful. And it depends where you go. People get scared, you know, and then they scare everyone else away from doing it. But just go find a spot where you can stand for an hour or two. And you'll find you get a ton of agreement and support and interesting conversations. And in your little way, just like in my little way, you start moving the needle. There's only one way to do this right now. It's word of mouth.
Yeah, or, you hunker down for 8 to 18 months and pop out a book like Abigail or Helen does.
But
Deborah. You know,
those are special people.
They are very special people.
Yeah. Most people can't do that.
Yeah. So you're one trip a month if you can do it, and a typical trip is probably 3 or 4 cities, typically, more or less?
Yeah.
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 Any plans on going to, or have you gone to, the Great Britain, where all of your crown nonsense comes from?
Honestly, I think it would be arrogant of me to go there.
Oh, okay.
They're doing great.
Okay.
They have tons of people speaking out. People ask me all the time. Hey, they say, hey, come here. I'm like, I mean, sure, it's still gonna, anytime you have conversations, you're gonna reach new people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always good. But they're doing great. They're doing better than anywhere else. I saw just today their conversion therapy bill, which Canada passed unanimously. They have their own version. They've put it on hold now because Fair Play for Women threatened to sue.
Oh.
So now they're going to go and have more, you know,
deliberations, whatever. Yeah. They'll pass it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But
maybe they won't.
They didn't pass the self-ID law in Britain. Women won. They don't have it in schools like we have it here.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're doing so much better over there. So the U.S.
better than Canada, that's for sure.
Yeah, the U.S. is the big one.
Yeah.
The U.S. still has massive influence across the whole world, of course, and they have diversity of media. This is the problem in Canada. We only have liberal media.
Mm-hmm.
We have no conservative media. The only way people get that in Canada is from watching U.S. news. And as soon as I started coming to the U.S., I mean, it's predictable. People in the U.S. care more about what happens in the U.S. If it happens in Canada, it's kind of interesting, but it's not happening at home. So the big podcasters and the media and the conservative media are never going to cover me up there. But if I come to the States, they will. And I need more support. And that media reaches Canadians as well. Hmm. So it's just strategic.
Yeah.
And Americans, too, are way more likely to get involved in activism. Canadians are so docile.
Oh. Hmm.
We've never had to fight for anything.
There was like a pelt war in like the 1780s or something. Right?
Well, we did burn down your White House.
Yeah, you guys hit our White House. You guys,
the old one. We burned down your White House. Yeah, we kicked you out of our country back before Canada really existed.
Yeah. You guys do have some pride up there in the Tundras.
Oh, yeah, we have some pride, especially in hockey.
Yeah, that's what I was going
to
say.
But when it comes to protesting
and
activism, and it's just so different, too. Like, our school board meetings aren't like they are here. I don't even know if there are any. Nobody goes to them anymore.
Well, since this trans thing specifically came along for the Canada, that's the first time that you guys have had these protests, it seems like, because you guys haven't had racial protests like America does or anything like that.
So. But we love to adopt your problems and pretend that they're our own.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing.
Yeah.
When stuff
like racism and things, you know. There's not an epidemic of racism in Canada. But some people want to pretend that there is.
Yeah, they use big words too. Epidemic.
Just white people want to pretend that there is.
Racism.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was watching some ballet. I tried to get through. I just can't watch this stuff anymore. I've watched it all, and it's the same stuff, like this diversity, equity, inclusion. It's all the same. Yeah. Nobody thinks differently than everybody else that does this. It's all just the same thing over and over and over again. But, you know, they're doing it to the ballet, and they were talking about, I don't know, and then they're, like, fishing for tragedy in order to have people identify into their diversity, equity, and inclusion thing. And it's like, well, it doesn't really translate up to there. So they make these claims and then they never back them up, you know, about racism here, racism there. But the transphobia thing is really interesting. Because, I mean, you just said on this very podcast that trans kids don't exist. Like that, if there's any definition of transphobia, it's got to be that. Trans kids don't exist.
I'm saying, yeah, we shouldn't give that identity. Of course, the people exist, but if you can't define what being trans means, is there really such a thing?
Having a monotheistic belief system, I have centuries of people having worked out a bunch of different arguments that I can pull on to say that, yes, I do have a soul. You know, and I have my own experience for that. But if you don't see me as a soul, I can't convince you that I have a soul. But with regards to the argument of me having a soul or not having a soul, my soul's existence doesn't depend on you recognizing it.
Yeah, you can identify as trans, sure, that's fine. Like, identify as whatever you want. But what does it mean?
Yeah.
We have to be able to define these terms. What is gender identity? According to the genderbed person, gender identity is your personality, your jobs, likes, dislikes, hobbies, roles, and expectations.
Roles.
That's your gender identity.
Like a Kaiser roll or a croissant?
What role you have in the household or
what
role you have in society.
Or in your friend group. If you're the one who is making the tea or if you're the one who's barking at the TV, that will define your gender.
That's right.
Right. Okay.
So, if you like to do the cooking, no matter what your sex is, that puts you on the girl spectrum. Jobs, too. This is the most used resource in the whole world.
The gender-bred
person? The gender-bred person. I'm not just picking some random unknown resource. This is in every school, and it's in the gender clinics. This is what gender identity is. It's stereotypes. So you can identify as someone who likes the other sex's stereotypes. That's what being trans means.
Or you're more materialistic, true trans, as it's called, or medical trans perspective or definition of trans is something that someone does. Right?
Yes, and Artie Morty.
Why somebody does it is the other question.
Artie has a podcast saying that same exact thing. Transition is something you do, it's not something you are. Yes, children have gender dysphoria. So if you want to call them trans kids, whatever. Don't force me to use that terminology.
Okay, yeah.
Right? If people want to call them that, they can call them whatever they want. But these are kids with a condition called gender dysphoria. But what's happening today is we've evolved this definition. Mm. And it's not a mental health condition anymore. It was gender identity disorder until 2013, when it changed in the DSM-5 to gender dysphoria. Now, I literally get emails from students telling me that, Chris, you don't need to have gender dysphoria to be trans. Oh, okay. Children are all taught they have a gender identity. There isn't science for this. This is ideology.
I just had to sit through an hour or 45-minute training on this stuff, and it just drove me up the wall. It just drove me up the wall. But that's because I did all this research and stuff.
Yeah, like, I couldn't go to university. Like, I would tear all of my hair out.
It was really difficult to sit through that. And it's just the state is mandating an ideology and forcing me to think this way. And then there was some really queer pictures of, they were talking about teachers need to embrace the sexuality of students and be open and talk to them about that. And on the screen, there was an adult male talking to like an 8-year-old like Muslim girl. It was just, I'm like, what is going on that the state is telling men to get into the heads of little girls? Like, it's like, no! Like, and you have to take it because that's the good thing. It's like some really twisted stuff's going on.
Super twisted, yep.
It's hard to not have a physical reaction to it.
And when you tell kids they have a gender identity, they have to figure out what it is.
Yeah, what is it?
Well, how do you figure it out? You look at the gender bed person, the gender unicorn. It's all sexist, regressive crap.
It's difficult.
So, yeah, we just have, it's a big education. Like, we've sit here and we've talked for, what, an hour and a half already?
Yeah.
I mean, we've covered a lot, but we could talk for 10 hours and keep hitting new things.
Yeah. The well is deep.
The well is so deep.
And the conversations are broad.
And this is the challenge with this, when you're reaching broad society. Hmm. Because it's my theory also that we simply need to reach 2% of society.
Hmm.
Ballpark. Maybe 3. Because then you hit critical mass and you can't stop it. Because people keep talking. This is a rabbit hole that when you go down, you don't come out for a while because it's so crazy. And when something like this is so crazy, when something is so crazy, you talk to people about it. And then they learn. And so we simply need to get the amount of people who understand what's going on. We need to increase the percentage just a little bit. Because then we have greater numbers that make it safer for these weak politicians to stand up to the crazies who are yelling at them. Because right now, the politicians are just afraid of the transgender lobby or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
They're afraid of getting yelled at. Let's face it, they're just afraid of getting yelled at. That's it. They're human beings.
Well, and these companies too.
Yeah. They just don't want to be seen.
Public relations.
To be bigots.
Yeah.
They don't want to be accused.
So better to sacrifice children on the altar of this than to, you know, take a hit in your PR department, right?
Yep. It's just basic human psychology. August Landmesser was a German.
Yeah.
He has a famous picture where all the Nazis are saluting. And he's standing there like this. He's surrounded by hundreds and hundreds of Nazis doing the salute. And he's just standing there with his arms folded. That's a rare person.
Well, he was made more rare after that, I'm sure.
I don't think they killed him. I read his story a while ago. He ended up,
taken off.
I guess they just didn't see it, and the photographer caught it. But, that's human psychology, man. That's how it goes. We are pack animals, and we don't want to
rock the boat.
Yeah,
it is a rare person that rocks the boat. That's where that's a vector of courage and true change.
And a lot of people can't because they got to pay their bills. They got jobs, they can't get fired.
Yeah.
I was self-employed and I just thought, well, I'll make money however I got to make money. If I got to pressure wash driveways on the side for a few $100, I'll do it. I have no pride.
You're a proud man, but you have no pride.
Well, those are two different things. Am I a proud man? I don't know. Selfish pride. Pride in oneself. That's not something we want.
Like, you're talking more about the conflict is, or the tensions with pride that is regards to integrity and dignity and fulfilling a certain genderbred role of protecting the family.
Yeah, like, humility, knowing your place, knowing that there's nothing special about you, knowing that we are all essentially created equal, and we should treat everyone with love and respect, and we should never exalt ourselves above others, that's what I mean. You know, traditional views. And when you take pride in yourself, then you take offense to things. And then that breeds hatred and upset feelings and animosity. So I think it's just important to realize that even all these people that we are fighting against, a lot of them themselves are just deceived. And they're probably good people inside. And it's a very rare person who is actually a terrible human being. But our society is so divisive, this culture is so divisive, we can't even talk to each other if you have a difference of opinion. And so that's a big problem. And all the politicians are like this. All the media are like this. And it's causing massive divisions in society. So, yeah, we got to go counter to this culture. And it's ultimately our job to love everybody. Even those who hate us, right? And that's where this pride thing comes in. If someone hates you, that's okay. Love your enemies. And usually their hate will melt away. Not or right away.
Or it's disguised love of some sort.
Yeah. So we're getting philosophical. I know you have a philosophical bent to you.
I do.
Yeah.
That's where I like to eventually surf. I need to check the time.
It's 1:42.
Yeah. Oh no. Speaking of hate. Oh yeah. Speaking of hate. Just got an angry email.
Right. Oh, okay.
People either want to be on my podcast or get angry if I don't let them on my podcast.
Yeah, see, that's pride.
On my half?
On their part. I want to be on your podcast. You won't let me on your podcast. Why won't you let me on your podcast? You have no right, person, to come on this man's podcast. It is an invite. And you should be grateful. And if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen.
Yeah, you can always start your own podcast. It's not that hard. Everybody has one now. I mean, you probably have one. You basically have one. It's just two minutes at a time.
You know,
your little.
I started up a YouTube channel. I haven't done much on it, but.
Well, you need to hire an intern, dude. If you didn't upset this whole generation, somebody would be volunteering to do all that heavy lifting for you. But maybe the right match will come along.
Well, yeah, it has to be a right match. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, if anyone wants to volunteer, they can reach out to me. Because I can certainly use it.
Yeah.
We can all use it.
Well, great to meet you in person. You're lengthier than I had expected.
That's what people say, yeah.
Yeah. Did I say, lengthy, not lanky, right?
Lengthier, you said, yeah.
Yeah.
Tall.
Your legs go on for days.
Yeah, I don't like the middle seat on airplanes.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, man, I can't imagine.
It's the worst.
Did you, what was your favorite sport in your early times?
Soccer.
Oh, really?
I wanted to be a soccer player when I grew up.
Oh, really? Yeah. Were you were really dedicated to that sport for years and...
I was just fast.
Oh.
And so I kind of dominated when I was young.
Oh, okay.
But then, speaking of puberty, I was the last boy to hit puberty. I was the late bloomer.
Oh.
So You know, puberty's way harder for girls, but I understand it can be hard for boys too. It was a little bit hard for me because
I thought it kind of sucked.
You know, I dropped out of soccer because I couldn't keep up anymore because everyone was way bigger. When I graduated high school, I was just 130 pounds and 5'9".
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was a little pipsqueak. I kept growing until I was 22.
In high school, you were 5'9"?
When I graduated.
No way.
Yeah.
That's a really interesting...
I kept growing until 22.
Arc. Huh. Then you shot up in college then.
There was no shooting up. It was just gradual. And I went to college for 2 weeks before dropping out.
Oh, really?
Well, I went to some classes just twice. I think I stuck it out in physics for 9 classes.
Okay.
And then I got out of there. Really? I was taking chemistry, physics, biology, math, and English or something.
Kind of heavy load.
Yeah, too much.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what I wanted to do with myself. So I dropped out of college and bummed around for a while and then went traveling and then got myself sucked into a cult.
Where,
Fast forward 3 years, escaped in the middle of the night.
Whoa.
After my passport and plane ticket had been seized and ran 13 miles in my Doc Martens and got on a train and got to Heathrow and...
You're a fast man.
And here I am, taking on a new cult.
Wait, hold on. So you were traveling around, you got abducted?
It's going to have to be another podcast.
Is it a
Britain? I didn't get abducted.
Well, you're in Britain, all of a sudden you wake up and... Oh, wow. Some sort of Gaelic cult? Were you guys fairy worshippers or something?
I'm not even going to get into
it. Okay, you're not going to get into it.
The internet will go crazy.
Someday you might, though?
Sure.
That sounds like a fun... I like cult stories.
Yeah.
I have a few of my own.
It was before the internet, so... If the internet had existed, I wouldn't have lasted 10 minutes.
Oh, okay.
But,
Was this kind of some sort of Midsommar thing where you guys did, like, some pretty naughty things with the elders?
No.
Okay. All right, good. No. We just need to get ahead of these rumors that you're, like, a goat-headed...
No, nothing like that.
Okay. No. Fun. I mean, interesting. Fun. That you escaped in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And your Doc Martens.
Yeah, ran 13 miles... Or farmers' fields and stuff. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, we got to end the podcast on this juicy note and then have you back on when you're ready.
It's a mystery.